Thank you for calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation.
You chose style. Bombas is styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.
Testing season is right around the corner, and this is when confidence really matters. When kids take time to review key concepts and strengthen their skills before assessments, it can make all the difference. IXL helps reinforce what they're learning right now, so they walk into every test feeling prepared, capable, and confident. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. Designed for students from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL delivers personalized, interactive practice that adapts to your child's level and pace. It's an easy, effective way to support learning as the school year heads into its final stretch. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests. Proven in all 50 states, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
KMOX and your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, welcome and thanks for stopping by. We'll be taking the Good Gardening Stroll shortly, but right now you can call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with questions, comments, or concerns. And Mr. Kelly, before you slip out,
yes,
tomorrow's President's Day. You
yes.
and Sue have any big plans?
Well, actually, I have a basketball game. And then, not playing, I'm yelling.
Oh.
I yell into a microphone.
Okay.
And then we have a family gathering afterwards, which doesn't have anything to do with President's Day, but it could.
That's true.
We could say it is.
Right.
Yeah.
At your house?
No, it's at a restaurant.
Oh.
I have a nephew who is moving back from Texas.
Whoa.
So we're going to welcome him back and just see what's up.
And check to see if he has an accent.
I would bet he does, because he's been down there a while.
Well, great. That sounds like fun.
Actually, he spent a lot of time in Florida, too, so it might be kind of a mix.
Southern Texas.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, great. So, thanks.
Are you going to celebrate President's Day?
I don't think so.
Really? Why not?
Well, I mean, just do it passively.
Oh, okay. A passive presidential celebration.
Yes.
Okay. Sounds good. Enjoy.
Yeah. Yes, on Saturday morning, we get together and we have a discussion about what's going on in your backyard. How about that side yard where the neighbor's gutters, downspouts are always flushing water? Or the front yard, especially garden space. And how are your house plants doing? Potting mixes, improving your soil, shearing and pruning. And guess what? Removal of bugs and diseases. Yes, this is the time of year when you can do some starting of insect control with using dormant oil sprays. Information used that I share with you. You can make decisions on your own, of course, but hopefully they'll help you solidify your options with the final judgment yours. So this is your show, and I appreciate you inviting me into your home, into your mobile device, onto your smart speaker or every place else where you might potentially be listening to the Garden Hotline. And thanks again for having me on your show. Very important player is Cole. He's again producing 2 weeks in a row. I don't know if he's soon going to be taking over the Garden Hotline or what. What's the story? I don't know. And I'm Mike Miller, by the way. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994. And I can come to your home and do a landscape consultation if you like. I call them a walk and talk. You can go to my website, www.mikemillerdesigns.com. On the homepage, there's my email address and phone number where I can be reached. Today, after the show, I'm headed up to Overland and going to take a look around. I did a design for these folks years ago. And as all of us do, we get a little bit older and they want to make some modifications. So that sounds great to me. So let's get moving. Today's Good Gardening Stroll is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. I'm just so tired of this last 2 days being so cold. But anyway, I started out and I looked up at the sky and I was surprised. About a little bit more than a half of moon was in the high in the sky. And the eastern horizon was stretching and waking up. It was about 6:30 and time to get moving. As I pulled up to where I was going to do my good gardening stroll, upreaching branches say, brr, it's cold. And the hydrangeas, which are planted below, say, yes, it is. The Tums building across the street says, yes, it is cold. A sign on the window says, authenticated game-used merchandise available. Etched bricks, part of the walkway, were dedicated to people who gave money and donations. The crosswalk signal says, wait, 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 wait. And where is this? Well, it's near Ballpark Village, where the construction continues. And where was it, really? Well, it is at gate number 6, the right field side of Busch Stadium, which is the east side. A banner of a player making a throw. It looks like probably a shortstop or a third baseman throwing to first base. It says, it's time to fly. There's some pansies planted and the raised brick bed spaces. They were going, ooh, we're cool season annuals, but it is cool. We need to get some water, and they are dry. Yes, it is baseball season, so at least spring training season. So tune in to KMOX and listen to see what happens as the Cardinals build up for the 2020 season. So, Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. If you have any questions or concerns, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Yes, folks, questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. When you call in, Cole will answer, and all you need to do is give him your first name and where you're calling from. And let's start off with Marcia, and she lives in Kirkwood. Hi, Marcia.
Hi, I've got three questions about trees. I need a recommendation for a shade tree that grows about 20 to 30 feet that doesn't have nasty little seeds that come off of it. And then I want to know if there are any trees that can be planted close to a driveway without buckling the concrete. And then third, where do you go to buy trees? Are there tree farms around, or what's the best suggestion?
With the trees, I would say just any year-round nursery, because most of them are going to get, they're not growing the trees necessarily themselves, but they're all getting them from probably the same production nurseries. So then the big box garden centers, early in the season, they may be okay, but I prefer to, you know, use the year-round type nurseries because the staff is a little bit better and whatever else it happens to be. And as far as trees close to driveways and stuff, how close are we talking about?
Probably about 5 to 6 feet.
That's pretty tight. And, I mean, impact-wise, I'd probably look at something maybe along the lines of some type of magnolia.
Okay.
Because they have, you know, a lot of surface rooting, but it's fibrous surface rooting, so it's not all trees have surface rooting because that's where the feeder roots are. So that would be probably maybe if you want something earlier blooming, I'd look at the star magnolia, which is the one that blooms earliest in the spring. If you want something that blooms in the summertime, the sweet bay magnolia, which blooms in the summertime and has a fragrance.
Okay.
And as far as trees that don't produce any kind of fruits or anything at all, that's kind of there's not too many that are going to be that way. So,
well, any shade trees then 20 to 30 feet that you like?
Probably, I would look, if you want something with colorful foliage, maybe the Japanese maple.
Okay.
And is this in full sun, or is this in a shaded partial shade, or whatever it happens to be?
Part shade.
Part shade. And also maybe look at something called a tri-color beech, B-E-E-C-H. And just take a look at it. It's got a very colorful leaf. It's quite slow growing, and in a part shade location, it should do fine.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Certainly. My pleasure.
All right.
And now let's head from Kirkwood into South City and go into Mary's yard. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have a problem. I had a tree stump in my backyard, and now I found I have a 10-foot square area where there's no grass, and I found I have termites. What do I do? What can I put down to get rid of these termites? Because I think they're eating my grass.
Termites really don't eat grass.
Oh, they don't?
No. So
the roots?
Yeah. The roots that are left over from the tree stump, that's where the problem comes in. I don't know when the tree was taken down. But
about 10 years ago.
Oh, really? So,
yeah.
And there's still some stump left?
Well, no, the termites ate the stump. I just dug around it and found a whole bunch of these little ants, but I decided they're not ants or termites.
Yeah. Well, I would probably, if you're worried about them, I would say get a professional service to come out and take a look at it and see what they need to do. But there really shouldn't be a whole lot of termite activity. They should be long gone. So to me, they may be termites, but they may not be, but just have somebody come out and take a look at them.
Is there something I can put on my ground that will grow grass?
There's probably a lot of just like old dead root systems there, and even though it's a 10-year-old root system wood, that's probably what the problem is. So it's, if you haven't had anything growing in, are you not getting any weeds growing in this spot or anything?
No.
Wow.
I know.
Yeah, there's something that's contaminated the ground there.
Uh-huh.
Because weeds can pretty much grow anywhere. And if you're not getting anything at all to grow there, have somebody come out professionally and take a look at what this insect problem is, but it's probably not related at all to, the reason why you can't grow grass in this spot. And then also get, a lawn expert to come out and take a look and find out what's going on there. It may be, I can't imagine what it is to me. It has to be so. Was there ever grass growing there?
Yes,
really?
I had beautiful bluegrass.
Hmm.
And now it's all gone.
Yeah, because usually tree roots, should implode within about maximum 7 years. And
uh-huh.
then there's going to be some, let's say, dead wood that's laying underneath there. So, my guess is probably related to that. So it probably needs to be turned over heavily duty, maybe some compost added to it, and then, try some sod or grass seed.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Certainly. Yeah, that's a 10-year-old tree that's been removed. Wow. Usually the impact is lots in sooner than that. But anyway, you never know. Everybody's yard is completely different. Let's go into this county and go into Mike's yard. Hi, Mike.
Morning. How are you, sir?
Very good.
I have a question. I have a reoccurring depression in my yard, and seems like I fill it, and within a year it's kind of depressed again. So I was wondering how you would recommend treating that.
Probably I would, there's got to be something that's underneath there. Is there any kind of pipes, anything at all in that area?
Nothing I'm aware of.
Because, that's the only thing that could cause it. There has to be erosion below the ground that would cause it to keep sinking like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would get to, maybe one of the utilities to come out and take a look, probably like, the water, the sewers, something along that line. Because
mm-hmm.
it's got to be related to that.
I see.
And ultimately, you just to, let's say, fill in a low spot and not blend it in with the existing soil is going to be somewhat counterproductive, because especially from the sounds of what's happening in your yard, there's something eroding the soil underneath, and that's why it keeps, sinking.
I see. Now, for filling that back in, what do you recommend?
I would probably, ultimately, if you get the problem fixed, then they're going to probably have to dig down there, do something to that spot. And then when they backfill it, then get some like a topsoil compost mix, mix it in with the existing soil. And then, you know, that's what I would do. And probably make it an inch or two higher than the surrounding ground. That way, when there is some settling, it should settle about at ground level.
And when you put that mix in there, should you tamp it down?
You don't necessarily need to tamp it, but you need to get it blended together. And that's why I'm saying put extra, you know, an inch or two. That way there's air pockets in there and everything else. And then it'll, you know, will settle because there's air pockets there. If you tamp it down, sometimes that creates highly compacted soil, and that makes it very difficult to grow anything in that spot.
I see. Now, I've also read, I don't know if it's just one of those urban tales, so to speak, but taking landscaping cloth at the bottom of the hole before you fill it, which will allow the water to flow through, but will keep this, the dirt from eroding. Is that correct?
No, not really.
No.
I mean, it's, you know, it would be more or less a cosmetic fix. It's not really going to fix the problem. Problem's deeper down.
All right. Well, thank you for the information. Appreciate
Certainly.
It.
Yeah. And now let's head over to Mary, and this Mary lives in Crestwood. Hi, Mary.
Good morning.
Hi.
Happy Sunday. It's nice to see the sun. I have an area that is wet. I lost two-year-old dogwoods there from the rain, I think, in the spring. It's kind of a natural slope, not a slope, but the water just flows there. So I wanted to build it up and plant something there. I've got two hydrangeas that are just kind of piddling along. You had mentioned the tricolored beech. Would that do well in the wet soil there?
No, it won't.
Okay. And then, so I wanted to add some soil. So you said to get a topsoil compost mix. Would
right, and mix it with the existing soil. But if this is a wet spot, you might think about just planting things that can handle a wet soil. Is this,
okay,
is this a big area or is this a little area?
It's along the fence. It's probably 20 feet.
20 feet by 20 feet?
Right.
I would probably
I don't need to go out 20 feet. It's just maybe 8 feet.
Okay.
I mean, I can go out into the yard as much as I want.
Right. I would
I've got a holly that's I planted that's doing okay in a magnolia sweet bay magnolia.
Right, which can take a wet soil. There's also, I mean, the inkberry is, you know, the holly you're probably talking about that can handle a wet soil because, you know, you could have something along that line. If you want something a little bit more colorful, look at the red twig dogwood, which is a type of shrub dogwood, which the branches, it's a shrub, so it'll have a lot of branches that are bright red. And then get a variegated one. So in the summertime, the leaves will be more or less white, pale green and white. And then in the wintertime, when those leaves fall off, then you just see red twigs sticking up.
Okay, because the regular dogwood didn't do.
Right. This is a tree, you know, I mean, this is a shrub that can handle a wet soil.
And what about the winterberry? Those look pretty nice.
Yeah. I mean, that would work very well, too.
And then I just wanted to build it up just a little bit. So just do they sell bags of that compost out in Valley Park?
Yes.
That would be soil and compost?
Compost mix. Well, if they're just selling the compost, just get the compost and mix it in with the existing soil.
Okay, so just dig it up and add it together. And put
right.
It back.
Make sure you get a nice blend.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Certainly. My pleasure.
Okay.
And let's go now to Katie. Katie lives in St. Louis. Hi, Katie.
Hi. I have two questions. First, I have some hydrangeas that just are big, beautiful bushes, but they never bloom. So when should I fertilize those, and what should I fertilize those with to get them to bloom?
All the hydrangeas like an acidic soil, so use an acidic fertilizer. But how old are these?
Oh, gosh. They've never bloomed.
They've never bloomed? I would say get rid of
them. Oh, really?
Yeah. Because if they've never bloomed, then there's something wrong with that particular variety or whatever it happens to be. But, you know, just if you like the hydrangeas, just go, you know, go and get, you know, to a year-round garden center and get good quality hydrangeas, whether you want oak leaf hydrangea, whether you want a forever variety, which blooms a couple times during the summertime, or whatever it happens to be. Or if you just want a spring-blooming one, then get the PG hydrangea.
Oh, okay. That sounds good.
Yeah.
And my second question is, I had four beautiful New Guinea impatiens. They were just blooming and gorgeous all summer last summer. and I couldn't bear to let them die, so I brought them in and tried to overwinter them, and one by one, they just died.
Right.
And I'm on the last one now. Is there any hope for overwintering New Guinea invasion?
Basically, no. They just don't like it inside, regardless of whatever the circumstances. I mean, you can read this stuff and, you know, put it in a room with a bright window that's, you know, the temperature's never going to get above this and that and everything else, but they just don't do well inside.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes the truth hurts, but, yeah, I've just never, you know, I mean, they even have a difficult time, even professional growers, to have them, you know, in the greenhouses in the wintertime. When you go in there, you're not going to see any New Guinea impatiens because they don't do well during the wintertime. Daylight, the amount of daylight, the temperature-wise, I mean, they can adjust everything, but they're just not going to have them. Let's head out to Lake St. Louis and go into Jane's yard. Hi, Jane.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
I think I know the answer to my question, but I'm going to ask you anyway. With all the warm weather of late, I have, seems like almost all of my bulbs have about 4 inches of foliage peeking up above the mulch.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen? Do I need to do anything?
Well, it's too late now because we've had that severe cold. So
right.
Go out there and take a look at them to see if there was any cold damage from these last 2 days.
But
and the cold damage is just going to make the, let's say, the tips of the foliage look brown. But it doesn't impact the bloom at all.
Okay. Okay. That's what I thought. I'll just hang in there.
Right.
Thanks so much.
And just, you know, wait for another week or so and then make sure everybody, we always think of, you know, daffodils, tulips, or crocus, or whatever it happens to be, any of these spring flowering bulbs, they don't really need any fertilizer, but it really helps them. Just get some all-purpose fertilizer and do it about half, you know, half bag rate. If you get a granular type, make sure you water it in, and that will help them, you know, longevity factor-wise. With tulips, it's not going to make that much difference, but with daffodils, crocus, grape hyacinths, and all the rest of those spring flowering bulbs, that will make a difference.
Okay, should I put that on now?
You probably could. It wouldn't be a problem. Just make sure you water it in because you want it to get down through your mulch and everything, and you don't want it just to sit on the foliage because fertilizer sitting on the foliage of any type can burn a hole in it.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much.
Certainly, my pleasure.
Okay, bye-bye.
And now let's go to Florence. Florence lives in West County. Hi, Florence.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Yes, I live in Wisconsin with about 10,000 deer, and they're eating everything in my yard, all my hostas, all my flowers. And the only thing I found last year that they did not eat were vincas. But do you have any suggestion of what other kind of flowers I can put in the yard that the deer will not bother?
Basically, the deer don't like anything that's fuzzy, but unfortunately, it sounds like from the type of plants that you've been growing that you have a very shaded yard. And so, consequently, there's not a whole lot of things that are fuzzy that grow in the shade. So,
uh-huh. Are there any plants that repel deer?
No. But what you might try, I don't know how big your yard is or anything else. The thing I found the most effective, yes, there are repellents that you can put down, but hanging bars of Irish Spring soap, you might give that a try and see what happens.
Oh, my gosh. Someone just told me that.
Yeah, smell is really a little bit horrendous, and the deer don't like it. So what it's going to do is just make them shift their, because they get into such routines and habits, they'll come back and back and back and back to the same place because it's easy to get food. And that's why it's kind of like us going to a grocery store. We go to the grocery store because it's very convenient, and they're doing the very same thing.
That's amazing. So how do I hang them? Do I hang them on a string on the fence?
Yeah, you could do it that way. Just make sure you kind of hang it, you know, in a couple different locations. You can tell where they're coming into your yard. Hang it, you know, further down and, you know, just dot a few here and there in every place.
They just walk up to the fence and jump over. It's amazing.
And you might, you know, go to your favorite garden center and see what kind of repellents they have, too. So you might want to do a combination of things.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
But unfortunately, you're probably, you know, I mean, if they're hungry, they're going to come in anyway. So But that's kind of how it is. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. If you have questions or concerns, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after these messages. Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We're heading out to Ellisville, where I grew up as a kid, from first grade all the way through high school. And that's where Tom lives. Hi, Tom.
Morning, Mike. I'm just going to give you a heads up. Like the lady that called you about deer, you get calls from people all the time about critters, whether they're birds or rabbits or squirrels or chipmunks. I was walking the dog last night around our common ground, and we had a partner on the trail. It was an armadillo.
Ah!
And I understand that, you know, they're normally nocturnal, eat bugs and stuff that are in the grass. That means they're going to tear up your yard at night, and you're not going to know what did it.
That's very true.
So you're going to get calls this spring and summer about something's tearing up my yard, and I have no idea.
Right.
Probably an armadillo.
It could be certainly that. You know, skunks will do the same thing. They'll rut because they're looking for insects just below the surface on your lawn.
Yeah. Just a heads up, Mike.
All right. Thanks a lot. Greatly appreciate it. Yeah, the armadillo is certainly moving north. You know, it's just amazing. I never thought they'd come this far north, but you never know. Let's go over to Chester, Illinois, and see what's going on in Steve's yard. Hi, Steve.
Hi there. How are you today?
Very good.
Hey, I've been looking in these garden books and stuff, and they're showing a blue wisteria tree. The flowers are real blue on it. Is that possible?
It is, but it's not. It is a hybrid, so consequently that means it's not quite as, you know, let's say vigorous or strong as the wisteria just is in general.
Okay. I also have some Japanese maple here at the house that are just still full of leaves. They haven't fell off yet. Is that normal?
No, it isn't, but I've seen quite a few maples, not just necessarily Japanese maples. But that are, you know, I've got a sugar maple right outside our kitchen window. It's probably still holding on to about 15% of its leaves. So just something screwy with the weather and everything else. I don't know why they haven't defoliated. But I wouldn't, you know, be overly concerned. But if some of the ones, especially the ones that kind of look like an umbrella, so in other words, a shorter one that gets really wide, they'll have a tendency to hold on to their leaves and, you know, through the entire winter time. But the ones that are taller, like the Bloodgood, those varieties, they should drop their leaves.
Uh-huh. Do you think that blue wisteria would be a good tree to buy, or?
Well, it's going to be, you know, it's kind of aggressive. So it's going to be really a vine, even though they're going to sell it, let's say, as a tree because they've pruned it as a tree. It's going to, you know, it has a potential to start going all over the place.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, that's what I needed to know. Thank you very much.
Certainly. My pleasure. Yeah. The wisterias, can be a very, very aggressive, you know, vine plant. So I'm assuming that this particular one, the reason why they're calling it a wisteria tree is because it's just a tree, you know, a vine trunk that they've pruned to make it look like a tree. And now let's go up to Louisiana and into Michelle's yard. Hi, Michelle.
Hi. I have a question about some peonies. I had four of them that were in a row, and they were all doing well, so I made the mistake of trying to transplant two of them, and they all died.
Ooh.
So, what's the best time if I want to replant them, and what's a recommendation for peonies?
With the peony, just in general, the little eyes that look like potato eyes, you want to have those about an inch or so below the surface. If you plant them too deep, then they're going to just push up foliage, and they'll not flower for you whatsoever. And as far as availability, that's when you can plant them. So springtime is by far the best time to plant. And they, when you dig them up, what you have to do is, because the root systems are very brittle when you dig them up, so you have to dig them up and kind of just leave them sit for a couple days until the root system gets a little bit more viable. And then you can replant it in a new location. But as far as it just has to be a well-drained soil, full sun, and with the eyes just an inch or so below the surface.
Okay, thank you so much.
Certainly, my pleasure. Yeah, the peonies are great. They're wonderful. In some of the old-time varieties, the problem is, you know, they bloom, it lasts for about a week or so, and then that's kind of pretty much it. My mother loved them. We had one side of our foundation was filled with peonies. I think they were from my great-grandmother. I'm not exactly sure. I don't even know if they're still there. I think one of my brothers may have dug them up and took them to his house. But anyway, let's go now to Oakville and into Rick's yard. Hi, Rick.
Hi. Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
Last spring, we got three dogs, and basically my yard has now turned into a mud pit.
Right.
And so we're trying to figure out the best thing to do. I've gotten several bids on getting Meyer Zoysia put down, but then also somebody said that we should do a combination of fescue and Meyer Zoysia as a possibility. We also talked to people about doing the synthetic AstroTurf, but that's very expensive. So right. I was just calling to get your opinion.
You're never going to get grass to grow if you have three dogs. I don't care what okay. blend it is or anything else. It's impossible. So
okay.
you're going to have, you know, isolated patches maybe where they don't, let's say, run as much. But the soil compaction as well as the chemistry of them going to the bathroom and everything else, that's where the real problem is. If I was going to try to do anything at all, I might give us, you know, the idea of using Dutch white clover as a ground cover. But for the most part, you're not going to have any kind of successful grass regardless of what's being done.
Okay, that Dutch white, so it's driving my wife crazy because they go outside in the mud and then they come back in and
sure.
they're just covered with mud.
Right.
Would the Dutch white clover be able to survive their running around and stuff?
Well, the reason why I'm saying that is because clover can, you know, grow where, let's say, cows are and things along that line. So it's still going to have a really difficult time. I mean, in reality, to cordon off a certain part of the yard so you can have successful lawn if you want it. But then where the dogs run, they're going to get muddy. There's no getting around it. And they're going to come in with muddy paws, or you're going to have to, you know, make them all stop and wipe their feet off and everything else. But you're just going to have a situation where you're never really going to have, a circumstance where you're not going to have mud.
Okay.
I mean,
all
in
right.
reality.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Yeah, unfortunately, the AstroTurf, that would be the only way. But like you say, it's very expensive, and it's not, putting it down. I actually have a design client who for years was battling his lawn, and he actually went ahead and got the AstroTurf and put it on his front yard. So if anybody else has any questions or concerns, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Mike Miller, KMY's Garden Hotline, back after these messages. Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Somebody called about the foliage on her spring flowering bulbs, you know, related to cold and everything else. And I explained that, you know, the cold may do some damage to the foliage, but it's really not going to impact the flowering. Other things that would be blooming this time of year, bulb-wise, the winter aconite, crocus, Dutch bulb iris, snowdrops, and the grape hyacinths will be blooming a little bit later. And woody plant-wise, there's a pink flowering almond, yellow cornelian cherry, the white star magnolia, and the witch hazel. So those are things not necessarily going to be blooming right now, but within the next couple weeks. Let's head out to Union, Missouri, and go into Joyce's yard. Hi, Joyce.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I listen to your show as often as I can, and I've gotten a lot of information from it. I want to comment on the guy who just called and said he can't grow grass because he's got three dogs.
Right.
I've had three dogs and sometimes four, and I have not had a problem growing grass. I just take really good care of it and keep it watered and, weed it and do everything you're supposed to do to it, follow what you do. And I haven't had a problem. It's just fescue, you know, what they recommend for this area.
Right, the K31 fescue, the tough one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And there are a couple trees right at the back of my yard, some oak trees that the roots come into the yard. And luckily, they're not close enough for the whole yard.
Right.
I can grow grass. So I just want to make that comment, and then I wanted to say, and I heard you say this 100 times, and I can't remember now, is potting mix or potting soil better?
Potting mix is by far the best. Potting soil gets too soggy and too wet.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure. I'm ready to repot some things, and I wanted to make sure I had it right. Thank you very much for everything.
Certainly. My pleasure. Yeah, that's great if you're able to, to keep your grass growing. And if dog-wise, as far as size goes and everything else, that can have an impact because the compaction, as they run back and forth, and especially if there's any kind of fence, they're running along that type thing. Sounds like you've had some great luck. So it shows how dedicated you are to your landscape. So again, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Indoor wise, your houseplants, if any of them are starting to show decline, it might be the time to just kind of say goodbye. But you don't necessarily have to do that, but especially watch out about overwatering. Because, as the days get longer, we think, well, the plant's a little bit wilted, whether it's a philodendron, whether it's Diffenbachia, whether it's a Dracaena or anything else. And you go, it's wilted, so maybe it needs more water. Watch out. Underwater by far more so than overwater. Anything that's in flower this time of year, go ahead and fertilize it, but fertilize it with half the label rate. Don't fertilize it with a full label rate because it's just going to be a waste of time and effort and money on your part. And as far as, the potting mix versus the potting soil, potting mix is very, when you pick up the bag, it's very light. Potting soil is very heavy and it's dense, and that's why you don't want to use that for basically houseplants. We've been fairly lucky as far as, rain goes and everything else. But still, it's still winter time, and if we get a period of 3 weeks or so without an inch or so of rain, and you do have evergreen trees and shrubs, they would certainly appreciate you getting some moisture on them. It was just like I was talking about those pansies that were down by Busch Stadium. The potting, the soil that they were growing in down there looked pretty dry, so they would probably appreciate getting some water. And also, your summer bulbs, just give them a check and see how they are doing. And another thing that you need to be thinking about, too, is go out and look and see if there's been any new leaves piling up in any part of your landscape. Because you move those leaves a little bit, rake them, get rid of them, there's probably a high volume of moisture in that situation where they were sitting. And that's going to create a fungus problem that's really something you got to watch out for. And summer bloomers, you're really kind of desperate. Gray winter, we're really kind of tired of it. But if you have, let's say, spring flowering things in your landscape, like forsythia or something like that, you can go out and just take a cutting of that, of the tree or the shrub, forsythia shrub, 1 foot cutting, bring it inside and put it in a glass of water or in a vase or whatever it happens to be. And you'll probably be surprised. In a couple of weeks, you're going to see forsythia blooms inside your house. And probably another week or so after that, you're going to see them in the outside. So that's a nice thing, too. Be sure and get a soil test done. And especially if you've had a history of using the same fertilizer over and over and over again, year in, year out, whether it's on your lawn, whether you're doing it, whether you're having a professional company do it, because extravagant levels of any kind of nutrients can be a detrimental impact to your soil in general, and consequently to anything that you're trying to grow. So the soil test will indicate, yes, you have too much of this, you don't have enough of that. Then you can make adjustments accordingly, because it is very difficult to grow anything here anyway. But if you got a situation where the soil is not the best, then it's going to be even more difficult as a result of that. As I said earlier in the hour, this is the time of year to get a tree service to come in and do a dormant oil spray. A dormant oil spray doesn't impact any kind of foliage or anything else, but what it does is suffocate any kind of, basically any kind of life, stage of an insect, whether it's eggs, whether it's larvae, whether it's adults or anything else. So February is a time when the Missouri Botanical Garden does the dormant oil spray, and they pretty much spray all their trees. And it just makes good common sense. Let's head out to Lori's, and Lori lives in St. Peter's. Hi, Lori.
Good morning, Mike. How are you doing?
Very good.
Thank you. I have a question. Last fall, I was having problems in my flower garden with voles, with a V.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to El Mel and got some of the green pellets and constantly was trying to poison them to death. whatever it took. And I was wondering what I can do this spring to hopefully, I don't know if they're still in the ground alive, but I don't want any voles in my garden this year.
Right. Understand. Voles are really lazy. So what they do is generally they use old tunnels that moles have actually created. But voles do a real, yeah, I mean, they do some major damage to your root systems or your plant material.
Yes,
so
I know.
watch out and make sure that you, if you've got mole tunnels there, like I said, moles don't eat plant material for the most part. They eat insects. They're, you know, whatever kind of insect, mainly the earthworms, but they eat anything else that they come across. And the voles, when those tunnels have been abandoned, that's what they head and use to get underneath root systems and chew on the roots of the plant material. So watch out for both of them, because there's no way to necessarily get rid of just the voles because they're using somebody else's tunnel. They're too lazy to dig a tunnel themselves.
Because I had one that came out one morning when I was in my garden, and I got a shovel and kind of like smashed it to death.
had
a neighbor come over, this guy, said, can you pick this vole up? I can't pick it up in my husband's at church, and I don't want to handle. And I thought maybe I could hang it up over the top of the garden to warn the other voles. This is what could happen to you if you come out. So I don't know if I should start throwing pellets down, like when stuff starts blooming.
a preventative type thing. Again, just watch for the mole tunnels,
okay,
because that's what they're going to be using. And also you can watch for, they usually have a tendency to nest underneath shrubs or underneath porches or, you know, something along that line. And just watch for the tunnel, you know, the holes coming up out of the ground. They'll be kind of like a little bit smaller than a ping pong ball. And there should be two different holes. And, you know, take a look underneath your shrubs or anything else, because that's where they're living, and they just use the tunnels to go eat.
Okay, yeah, because I seen kind of like the tunnels in my garden. That's where I would throw those pellets in. I thought, well, I'm going to get some smoke bombs from 4th of July, throw those at whatever it takes. But maybe hanging that dead body would have done some good, too.
That's true.
Well, thank you so much for your show. Really appreciate it.
Well,
every
great
week it's a joy.
Well,
so thank you.
Thanks for having me on your show. I greatly appreciate it. And also, way back when, in the 1800s, they used to trap moles, get moles, dig them up or whatever, and they'd skin them and make coats out of them. If you can imagine how many moles it would take to make a coat. That's absolutely incredible. Other critters that you need to be watching out for. Actually, when I was walking back from the store the other day, I saw, some squirrels had been, a squirrel had been digging. You know, there's acorns in the park right across the street. So they probably brought an acorn over and planted it. So when a squirrel digs, he only goes down about 3 or 4 inches, then backpacks, whatever he puts in there, which is usually going to be an acorn. So understand that that's, watch out for that activity, as well as the skunks and squirrels and raccoons and everything else. So if you have questions for the next hour, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. See you after the news. Yes, folks, welcome to the Garden Hotline Tip of the Trowel Hour. I'll be giving the tip of the trowel shortly, but right now you can call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with your ideas, questions, concerns, or comments. And Mr. Kelly, before you take off,
yes,
are you? I saw you're heading towards the door, so you can go.
No, ahead, I just was waiting. Just wait.
You know, we talk about feeding birds.
You
enjoy it a lot.
Oh yeah,
and you got those, fancy smancy feeders and everything else. See, I get thistle seed and I just throw it on the ground,
and that works.
Yeah,
yeah, they'll eat it off the ground.
Do you ever do suet?
No, I haven't. I used to. I've done it before, but I just stick with these, with just the basics now.
Seeds.
And again, it's funny because the other day, I have three finch feeders, and they were completely empty, untouched for a day or two.
Wow.
And then yesterday morning, I think it was, they were loaded, all of them. So some days they come by and eat, and other days I guess they're okay. I don't know.
It probably, if they can sense the weather.
I think so. When it's going to get bad, they flood,
exactly.
No doubt about it.
Right.
Yeah. So,
oh, great.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
All right. Enjoy. Yes, folks. And by the way, thanks for having me on your show where we can discuss plant selection, cares for, ups and downs related to annuals. As I said, outside Busch Stadium, they've got some pansies that, you know, don't look great, but pansies are going to be just erupting in the garden centers if, you know, in another couple weeks. And your bulbs, your edibles, your ground covers, your houseplants, lawn, perennials, roses, trees, shrubs, vines, or water gardens. I'll share my thoughts and ideas, but please remember my answers, comments, and opinions is not the only garden path to take, but strictly offered to you to consider. And across the big board is Cole. He will be answering the phone, so when you call, he just needs your first name and where you're calling from. During the week, I spend my time doing landscape consulting. And that's when I come to your home and we can talk about aesthetics. We can talk about problem solving. We can talk about plant, you know, alternatives, all those kind of things. You can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com, the homepage. That's where my email is and my phone number as well. And I can come to your home and do a walk and talk. As I said last hour, I'm headed to Overland after the show today. And when I come to your home, I'll share about 40 plus years of experience, starting off at the Botanical Garden after went to school in California, came back to St. Louis, and Botanical Garden and all kinds of other stuff since then. And tip of the trowel, special recognition for individual, group, or situation that's made an impression on me, and it's brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. This is kind of a special anniversary for me this weekend, Valentine's weekend. In 1998, Bill Reeker of the news department used to co-host the show. And in 1998, February, you know, 14th or 15th, I forget exactly which day it was, I had a grand mal epileptic seizure while I was answering somebody's question. And things, you know, I didn't even know I had epilepsy. I was having petite seizures prior to that. I found out later on it was related to a medication that I was actually taking. But so it made a huge impact on me. I still take medication that's anti-epileptic. So I take it four tablets or pills or whatever you want to call it every day. So the tip of the trowel goes out to all the neurology departments and everybody who helps somebody like me who just sort of fell off the chair when I was answering a question on the garden hotline and got zipped to the hospital and found out I had epilepsy. So crazy stuff. And so the neurology department, tip of the trowel to you guys for not only me, but for everybody else that you help. And now every year I have to go back to the neurology department and have them check me out. So that's who gets the tip of the trowel today. Let's get a couple phone calls in before we take a break. Let's go over to Belleville. And Julie, how are you today?
Hi, great, Mike. Thank you so much. And we appreciate you so much and so glad that you're on the air. You are super smart. my question is, we also have a yard with a big dog, 110 pounds, and has more shade than sun. And that K31 fescue, how soon can we put that down?
Well, first of all, K31 needs to be in full sun, to be honest with you.
Oh, okay.
So
right.
That's pretty much every, I mean, even shade tolerant grass seed is very narrow bladed and is very weak. So it wouldn't be able to handle this, you know, the situation of what you're dealing with. And if you've got a dog that big, and I'm assuming it's in a fenced yard, and so.
It's not a fenced yard, but he does pretty much stay in the backyard when he is out.
Right. So, I mean, you're lucky that he does, but just, you know, even if he's not running back and forth along a fence or anything else, just the compaction of the soil, and then whenever he goes to the bathroom, that adds an impact to it. But the K31 wouldn't be successful for you, you know, in a part shade situation whatsoever. So,
okay. What do you suggest?
I would say just get all kinds of different seed, all kinds of clover, all kinds of weeds or whatever, and just throw it out there and see what happens.
Okay.
I mean,
all right,
we'll
do.
Because, I mean, if you get, let's say, shade-tolerant type ground covers like ivies or periwinkle or something along those lines, to get it established, it's going to be difficult because the shade is created by trees, I'm assuming, and consequently the ground cover is going to have a difficult time. Then you add the dog on top of that. You may just be spinning your wheels, spending a lot of mental money and real money, and the end result's not going to be any different.
Right, right. So maybe Dutch white clover.
Give it a try. I mean, it does really prefer, you know, to be in a situation where it's in sun, but I would say just try anything and see what happens. Okay. And maybe just a combination, you know, one spot will be this, one spot will be that, so just so you're not fanatical.
Okay. Or switch it over to a rain garden, I'm thinking.
Right. Exactly.
All right. Well, thank you so much. You take care now.
Yep, you do the very same thing. And now let's head out to Manchester and see what's going on with Vern. Vern, how are you?
I'm doing good, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Good luck with working with the neurologist. My neurologist and I are very good friends now.
Great.
I have a redbud tree, and it has some branches that have splits, and I believe they're from locusts in them. Do I need to, if that's true, do they need to be trimmed off, these branches? And how do you treat for locusts? I think they're laying their eggs in there.
Yeah, what
right?
They can do is they can rut and then lay eggs in there. If the branch is still healthy and pushing out, you know, flower and then consequently putting out foliage, I would say just leave them alone. I wouldn't bother.
Okay.
And then if you do, if you suspect it is, you know, the locust, cicadas, or whatever it happens to be, most of the insecticides have to be contact killers, so you got to go out there and spray them directly onto the insects.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you very much, Mike.
Certainly, my pleasure. Yeah, that's the insecticides. I mean, there are some systemics that, you know, are a little bit effective, but for something like cicadas or locust, I mean, that's probably the rutting and everything else is problematic. But again, if the branch looks healthy, if it's still doing, you know, it's not dying or anything and you're still getting leaves and flowers, then I would say just leave it alone. Mike Miller, KMWash Garden Hotline, back after these messages. Just remember, folks, there are two different kinds of weeds. No, actually, there's more than two, but I mean two major types, perennial and annual type. Now, there's annual cool season weeds, and there's annual warm season weeds. So start watching out. Because and when the forsythia is in bloom, which is a yellow flowering shrub, you need to put the pre-emergent down. And what that does is create a chemical barrier on the surface. And when those warm season weeds start germinating, it kills them immediately. What are some of the types of warm season weeds? Well, spurge, purslane, ragweed, you know, all that kind of stuff. Yes, carpet weed, black medic, crabgrass, barnyard grass, goosegrass, all kinds of different stuff as well. So just remember, when that happens, you can really save yourself a lot of grief by putting a pre-emergent down. Let's head over to Illinois and go into Bill's yard. Hi, Bill.
Hello.
Hi.
I've got a question about raised garden beds.
Okay.
I built one, but I'm going to build another one for strawberries. And what do you put in the beds? What the dirt or fill or whatever?
Basically, a nice organic compost mix. Mix of topsoil and compost with the existing soil. So what you want to do is measure the square footage, figure out how much, you know, square footage you have, and then, you know, go to wherever you're going to purchase, you know, your topsoil compost or whatever you decide to mix into the ground. And you're going to put in 2 inches at a time, mix it in with the existing soil, then add 2 more inches. And so I don't know how high you want to really make it, but
the first one I made 4 foot because that's about where I reach. And this one I'm going to make 3 foot.
Yeah. So, I mean, so you're going to have to, you know, get quite a bit of material. So, but, yeah, just make sure that you make a nice blend with the existing, you know, the existing soil. Even though it's so high, the root systems of your strawberries will probably never get down into the ground. Still, you want to make sure that it's not compacted underneath.
Okay. Well, on the first one, I went over by the barn. We had some manure pile there. It was, you know, pretty old.
Mm-hmm.
I used that, and then on the top, I put some. We got a sawmill, and I had some old sawdust there, and I put that on top. And I didn't get it done until like July, so I put some green beans in it, and they weren't doing too well, so I gave them some fertilizer, and they did real well that way.
Yeah, definitely. Any kind of edible type things definitely needs fertilizer beyond, good quality soil. So anything that you have that's organic like that, as long as it's aged, you should be fine using that.
Okay. I thought about going over to cross the bridge there and getting that compost and putting on top. Is that just to put it on top of the sawdust?
Well, I would mix it in. Okay. I just wouldn't layer it on top. So you want to make sure that you have, it's kind of like, mixing anything in a blender. If you don't blend it just right, it's not going to work, whether you're making a milkshake, whether you're making a cocktail or anything else. You got to, it's going to be to the advantage of whatever, with the drink. Obviously, it's the taste-wise, but for the plant material, a good blending is going to be to the advantage of the plant material.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Certainly, my pleasure. And anybody else, questions or concerns, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. So we've got phone lines open. Let's head now to Crystal City and go into Scott's yard. Hi, Scott.
How you doing, Mike?
Hi. Nice
to hear from you.
Yeah, go ahead.
First of all, I wanted to call about the cedars. I'm sorry about that to interrupt the garden questions and stuff, but I already had brain surgery for the seizures before, but it didn't work. And they got me on Onfi and Vimpat and a couple other different medicines. But I'm going to have to go back in there to SLU, and I'm supposed to have another operation, they're going to have somebody in my room this time instead of a sleep study. They're going to do this where it reads out right away. But I understand. I'm sorry about that, because I know exactly what that's like. But my one question, gardening question, is I have done everything to rip out the vines away from the garage, but they'll still grow. They keep growing. Is there anything that's safe that I could spray down there that will kill the roots? That's all, sir.
Yeah, basically, I mean, the systemic type, you know what type of weed it is as far as the vine goes?
It's just one of those vines that grow up right alongside of it, where you pull it off and it leaves a mark on the garage itself.
It's probably it could be a couple different types, but the best thing to do if you don't want to, use any kind of herbicides, problematic type circumstances, is dig it out.
Just dig the whole thing out.
To go down, you're probably going to have to go down about 6 or 8 inches and just dig up, individual, let's say 1 foot square pieces, and shake all the soil off the root systems, and then that's probably going to be the most effective way to, take care of your circumstances.
That's what I was figuring, but I didn't know, because there's a couple places I did dig by the fences and stuff where it'll still grow, but I think it's from the neighbor's yard. It'll come over and just go through the fence itself.
Right, exactly. Know? So, I mean, that could be certainly the circumstance, but yeah, you've got to get the entire root system, and you, like I said, usually about 1 spade depth should be able to get the entire root system. Now, you're probably going to have some sprigs and stuff like that, but so it's not going to be just a one-shot deal. It may take a couple times of going after it, but that would be my recommendation.
Do I put anything in there after I dig them out? Just to keep it from coming back, or do I go ahead and dig them out?
Just dig them out, shake the soil, and make sure you just get all the root systems and the stems and everything out. Shake the soil back into the hole. And if you
see,
that's probably going to be the easiest way.
Well, God bless you. I understand the seizure situation. Thank you, sir. Have a great day.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I haven't had any kind of surgery or anything, but it's really kind of a dramatic type thing. So, my tip of the trowel to you, certainly, for having to deal with what you're dealing with. Let's head now to Shrewsbury and go into Steve's yard. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Mike. How you doing this morning?
Very good.
I've got two questions. I've got a large 35-year-old white locust tree in my front yard, and it has two surface roots that are kind of protruding out of the ground, and I'm afraid that people or kids or the dog is going to trip over that. My wife prefers that I don't touch those roots. I was wondering if it's safe enough to trim those two particular roots that are over the, you know, up out of the grass.
You're probably, it's ill-advised to do that because you start, you know, whacking and, chopping off roots. The amount of growth you have above the ground is related to how much growth there is below the ground, even though part of the roots is up on the surface that you can see that people could trip over or anything else. You chop some of those and it could really start doing some overall damage to the above ground growth of your tree. So locust trees, they're native, they're tough, they're durable, and the surface rooting, that's just, you know, part of the aging factor and the type of soil that you have there in Shrewsbury.
Yeah, I guess I'll just keep that grass up as high as I can around those roots, and maybe people won't trip over.
Yeah, how far away from the trunk are the roots actually on the surface?
Oh, probably maybe 6 to 8 feet.
Also, you could just put put 6 or 8, just cover the area with mulch.
Yeah, I do have mulch around the tree itself, but maybe I'll expand that a little bit further
right
out.
Just, and just cover, you can put the mulch, make the mulch about to, don't pile it up on the trunk. So do a kind of a bagel type thing and make it, go out and, cover 3 or 4 inches or so with mulch.
Great. Okay. And my other question was, in my backyard, I've got, I had 5 amber maple trees planted when we moved in about 35 years ago, mm-hmm. and I've only got 4 left. And they're starting to get pretty ratty. I don't know if they're at the end of their life expectancy here. But they get so high that they start getting up by my roof and on my gutters. Can I top those, and will that affect them at all?
Yeah, the maples really prefer to be pruned in the summertime. And okay. So, again, just wait, wait for a couple months and then do the pruning. But amber maples are pretty tough and durable. They usually have multi-trunks. And
right,
I don't know
these do have multi-trunks.
Yeah, and so consequently, another nice thing of them, they can take a wetter soil circumstance, but that may not have anything to do with you. But yeah, you can certainly do some pruning with them.
Okay, and how much do you think I can take off of those?
I probably, again, would not take more than probably 25% off at the most.
Okay. All right, listen, I appreciate your help, and I appreciate your expertise. You have a good day, and hopefully we'll have an earlier spring.
Amen.
Thank you, sir.
I agree. And now let's go to Barb, and she lives in Wentzville. Hi, Barb.
Hi, Mike. I wanted to ask a question about the pre-emergence. I think I've used it wrong 1 year and had a lot of trouble. Can I put that over in a flower bed, like got cone flowers and all kind of flowers in it that return every year?
Right.
Can I put that over it?
Yeah, basically you want to get a product called Preen, P-R-E-E-N. That's the best one for, bed spaces. And what it'll do is, your cone flowers and everything, now they do come back, they're perennial, so they come back from the root system and things like that. But also they, if you left the flowers on there long enough, they do drop some seed. So that's going to impact whether the seeds are going to germinate. If you're not that concerned about it, again, just, get the Preen and put it down, read the label, on it, or ask wherever you get the product. And you're going to be putting it down the same time as I was talking about when the forsythia is in bloom.
Okay, I've used Preen before, and I worked it into the soil.
No.
Yeah, I found out. I couldn't grow green beans, planted them 4 times. So why you? Because the flower bulbs are different than trying to plant seed and get it to grow, huh?
Right, exactly. Completely different. And Preen is, was formulated for, bed spaces as opposed to the majority of the pre-emergents that are available. They're, for more lawn, and they're bigger bags and all that kind of stuff as well.
No, I have a big thing of Preen here that I was scared to use it again. So do I have to work it into the soil the flowers?
No, not at all.
Okay.
So you just want it on the soil. Do you have mulch on your beds?
Not much.
Okay, so then, yeah, just put it on the surface, because again, what the pre-emergent does is create a chemical barrier on the surface, and then when the seed germinates, it kills it right at that point of germination.
Okay, that's great. Thank you. Thank you.
Certainly. My pleasure. Mike Miller, KMWash Garden Hotline. If you have any questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. I talked about the warm season weeds germinating when the yellow forsythia is in bloom. And what's growing in your lawn right now or in your bed spaces or things like that are the cool season annual weeds. They germinated last August. They love it when it's cold. They don't care how cold it gets or anything else. So watch out in your lawn or on your bed spaces for things like henbit, chickweed, annual bluegrass, rabbit foot clover, shepherd's purse, and things along that line. Probably the best thing to do is you could certainly use a broadleaf weed killer on the things, except not on the annual bluegrass, but you can hand dig them too. So that's kind of what I do or go about it. Let's head out to Sunset Hills and go into Gary's yard. Hi, Gary.
Hey, good morning, Mike. I have a question for you.
Sure.
We bought a house last year and it has a pool. Around the pool is probably a 10-foot retaining wall, and the previous owners planted junipers to for a privacy barrier. I'm sure the soil in there is probably not the greatest, and these junipers are too close together, I'm sure, and it's only about a 4-foot wide area. And they're dying from the top down. So they had topped a few of them off just to cut off some of the dead branches. I guess that's probably just a temporary solution. And when they're fully dead, what do you suggest we put in there?
Are you going to try to create a barrier?
Yeah, it would be nice to have a, thank you. It'd be nice to have a barrier for privacy. So I'm sure it's going to be hard to figure out what to go in and how much time do we leave between ripping these things out and putting something else in.
Yeah.
So the barrier is the goal.
My tendency would be to think about using some kind of trellis and grow vines on the trellis and maybe even just grow annual vines as opposed to a perennial type vine. So in other words, morning glories, moonflowers, those type things as opposed to, you know, let's say, campus radicans or, you know, in other words, or honeysuckle or something along that line. Because anything that you put in, if shrub-wise, is going to take a long time, where if you put, you know, sections of fence or trellis in, you can grow the vines and get it basically growing that same season and to screen the views.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, and I'm figuring the soil's probably pretty rough in there anyway, so.
And I mean, it would always help to improve the soil before you plant the annual, you know, the annual vines in there. But there's so many different, I mean, there's grape hyacinth vines, there's all kinds, and they just, you know, for the first few weeks after they're in the ground and they germinate, they're going to be a little bit slow, but then they'll explode and you're going to be amazed at how fast they actually grow.
Okay, that's a good idea. Thank you. I appreciate that. And so if we cut these things down, just cut them off and leave the trunk and everything in there and just plant the vines around there, so it would be okay leaving that in?
Well, that's not the ideal circumstance. It'd be better if you could get them up out of the ground. But if it's too much work, just, you know, give it a try and see what happens.
Okay. But if they're, topping them is just a temporary solution, that's not going to slow the slow death they're going through now, right?
No, it really won't. It's probably, they may be too wet. And that's why you generally, when things start dying from the top down, is, you know, the moisture factor.
Okay. Very good. Well, thank you for your help.
Certainly. My pleasure. And now let's see where are we headed. Let's go into Tammy's yard, and she lives in St. Louis. Hi, Tammy.
Hi, Mike. Following up on the preen discussion from a minute ago. Mm-hmm. So if I wanted to then put down mulch, how long do I need to wait when I lay the preen down before I can put mulch in the bed?
I would probably wait for a couple weeks because you want to make sure that you're going to get, you know, as many of the, let's say, weed seeds germinated during that time and killed off before you put the mulch on it. The mulch really doesn't necessarily impact, let's say, the ability of the preen to work. But, you know, going in there with a shovel or a rake or whatever, how you're going to spread the mulch or, you know, wheelbarrowing it in, that just breaks that barrier. And so that's what the downside is.
Okay. Very, very good. Thank you very much.
Certainly. Bye. And now let's go to Waterloo, Illinois, and into Sue's yard. Hi, Sue.
Hi, Mike. I am interested in putting in a new, like a wildflower garden.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have an area where right now it has grass and weeds. And I just think I want to fill it with wildflowers. And I was wondering, what is my best plan of doing that? You know, do I want to do seed? Am I better off getting plants?
Probably a combination of both would be the ideal thing. So get some, you know, already germinated, you know, wildflowers or whatever you're going to go after, you know, from the garden centers. Then mix in some of the, you know, mix in some seeds too.
Okay.
But the area.
How should that's what I need to do. How to prepare the area.
Yeah. I mean, anything that's in there, you should really get rid of, like either kill it off or dig it out or something along that line. And then mix, you know, some, again, organic materials in that ground, in that bed space, you know, an inch or so. And or 2 inches, and then go from there. So probably I'd probably be very patient. Maybe for the first year, just go after getting rid of everything that's there, and wait for a full year, and then plant next year.
All right, that's not the answer I want to hear.
Well, that's the ideal situation, because if you don't, you're going to have, even if you put herbicides down and it kills a lot of them, it's not going to get rid of all of them. It's just that way. I mean, you could plant in there. It's just you got to be really careful on knowing what's what. So if you see some stuff coming up, got to make sure that that's a weed and you want to get rid of it, either digging it out or, you know, painting herbicide on it or whatever it happens to be, and not, you know, killing or getting rid of something that's, you know, some seeds that are germinating or some perennial wildflowers that are in there.
Well, what's the difference in a wildflower and a weed?
It's all how you look at them.
I know, exactly, because a lot of the wildflowers are weeds.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
yeah.
We call them weeds.
Right.
So there I go with that.
Right. So, I mean, you could just, it all depends on what you want to embrace.
Okay. So I want to do some this spring and summer. So I want to take this area that's part of that's between two gardens. And this is, I live in the country. So this is country style. We don't care if there's weeds in it and stuff.
Oh.
There's going to be weeds. I mean, there's too much here.
Right.
There's going to be weeds. I mean, I got this big bird area out here where every year these giant sunflowers grow, and I have no control over those because that's what's in the feeder and every year. And so I'm even going to add more sunflowers because I like the sunflowers.
Right.
But I guess my idea is how should I start just to say, okay, this patch of grass and weeds is now called a garden. What do I want to do to
I would rototill it, level it out, and see what happens.
Okay, should I put anything in there to kill anything, or just till it and let nature do
it? I would just, you know, till it, let nature, you know, and then you can sort of like selectively figure out what there is, because like you said, some things that are considered weeds here in the city is not necessarily weeds, you know, where you are. So consequently, it might be, you know, ragweed, it might be who knows what. It's something that you really want, and not necessarily that you want ragweed, but so that's, you know, do it that way. Then you can kind of start from ground zero and see what's going to come up.
So should I, after I till it, do I want to put the compost on top of that then?
You could put the compost down, but mix that in as well. Just don't lay your compost on top.
Okay.
And just mix it in. And probably I'd rototill it, wait for 2 weeks, see what's going to come up, and then, you know, put the compost in, then rototill it again. Then you could do the planting, either seeds or perennials that, you know, that you get at your favorite garden center or whatever.
Okay, so wait 2 weeks, put down the mulch, and then rototill it again. Do I want the mulch to sit on there before I rototill it the second time?
Yeah, it doesn't really matter. I mean, not necessarily, you know, you want to make sure that you don't use wood mulch. Use compost as opposed to mulch.
Right, right. I know what you're saying there.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, not mulch, compost.
Right.
Okay, compost. Okay, then when do I put the seeds down?
Anytime after that. You know, you've already seen what there is there, and then so you put the seeds down or get some plant material. Just make sure, maybe get some landscape paint where you put the seeds down, and paint a circle around the area where you put the seeds. And then consequently, you know that these are pretty much seeds and the seeds are going to come up. They all kind of look the same. If you see something else coming up in that area, maybe think of, let's see, what is this? And should I go ahead and get rid
of it? I'm pretty good at knowing the weeds versus the plants.
Good.
Don't ask me why, but my mom, I don't know. I just learned that. So I'm not too concerned about that, but I like the idea of the landscape paint. I've never heard of that before. Okay, that all sounds great. So I need you to tell Brian that he's got a lot of work to do then.
Exactly.
Let him know.
Right.
Thanks for the info.
Sure, my pleasure. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. If you have questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Yes, folks, we're headed to Jim's yard, and he lives in Fenton. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, how you doing, Mike? Sure. Anyway, I have just a suggestion to people. I hear them calling in at different times talking about their dogs tearing up the yard and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I usually buy, like, cattle fencing, which has, like, 6-inch squares into it. I cut them about 6 foot long, bend them over about 8 inches off the ground, and that way they're movable, they're lightweight, and you can move them to mow the grass or whatever you need to do. But it stops the dogs from running the fence or just running a path, you know, like that. And
right.
It's also good for deer around the bottom of the tree or bush, whatever they're attacking. Dogs or deer don't like to step into a hole or anything that runs that. So usually it'll slow them down anyway.
All right. Well, great. That's good insight. Thanks.
All right. Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Certainly. And now let's go over to Maryville, Illinois, and see what's going on in Joe's yard. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Mike. Good morning.
Good morning.
I got a question on zoysia grass. Most of this yard here is zoysia, and I've been familiar with it for 25 years. It's never been dethatched. So I was wondering, I tried with a garden rake. That's impossible. So with a leaf rake, I can get a lot of dead material out of the zoysia. But my question is that enough? Or should I get a machine or have somebody dethatch this?
You could dethatch it with a machine if you want. But if your zoysia has been healthy for 25 years, using a leaf rake, there's nothing wrong with that. Probably what I would do is right as it's starting to green up, that's when you want to do the raking. Go ahead and, you know, set your mower kind of low, like about 2 inches or so. Cut that, and then go ahead and rake it after that.
Now, after I rake all this dead material out with the leaf rake, do I just leave it there, or do I have to get it off the yard?
You should get it off the yard. So either, you know, throw it in the neighbor's yard, or, you know, which I know you don't want to do. But anyway, don't just leave it sit there. So just because you're getting it out of there, because, you know, if you just leave it kind of piled up as it is, you know, raked up, you could create a fungus problem because it's going to create, you know, more humidity. That's the whole thing about dethatching. Also gets rid of dead blades and everything else, but also it makes it so there's better air circulation on the surface.
So I can, with that leaf rake, get down close enough to the soil level to do it right.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, garden rake is a little too stiff. That's how I dethatch. I have zoysia too, but that's how I dethatch mine, is with a leaf rake. So thanks, Joe. And now let's see. Let's go into Jim's yard, and he lives in St. Louis. Hi, Jim.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Sir, I got a question about a white swamp oak tree that I planted 4 years ago. The first year it did great. The second year it actually produced the big, healthy acorn, you know, the inch and a half acorn.
Whoa.
The third year, and again, this tree was probably 6 years old when I purchased it.
Mm-hmm.
Last summer it was doing great, growing beautifully, and I noticed swarms of a small bee that was all around the tree for maybe a month, maybe starting in July. I didn't think much about it. I know the big oak trees around me, the pin oaks, all have those ugly oak galls on them, but right. I didn't think that it bothered a white oak, because these were all pin oaks that have this problem.
Right.
So then last fall it didn't drop one acorn. Now as the tree is losing the rest of its leaves, I'm noticing that all of the acorns are about the size of a pea, and they all have a small hole drilled in them, and they're stuck to the branches. Was that probably the result of all those little wasps that I saw swarming the tree?
Yeah, it could certainly be, you know, a result of that. But, you know, that's actually an insect that's actually, you know, drilling into the acorn. So that's what, you know, there's not too much you can actually do about that, to be honest. So I don't have the information, you know, right off the top of my head. But let's see. I forget exactly what the insect is, but if you listen next week, I can update you on that. But it's, you know, the hole in the acorn is separate from what you're, you know, what you're experiencing. And then the wasp that causes the gall, that all they do is, what they do is slit the, you know, the branch. Then the female deposits the eggs into the slit. And then when the eggs hatch, that's what causes that bloating. And that's a kind of a protective type thing. So that's what happens. But holes in acorns are completely separate from that. There was somebody that called, you know, about, you know, holes in pecans and hickory trees. But I'm sure that that's probably what you're experiencing.
Okay. All right. I appreciate it. Now, listen, and man, I love that you share your education of botany with everybody. It's an incredible show.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you listening, because it's your show. If you weren't there, I wouldn't be here. And now let's go to Ryan, and Ryan lives in St. Louis. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
Good.
I have a zoysia lawn. Used to be very healthy lawn. At one time, a couple summers back, I should have watered it, and I didn't. It burnt up. Crabgrass kind of said thank you very much, took over. And I'd say about a third of my lawn now is crabgrass.
Yikes.
So, yeah. I'm looking for a way to kind of take it back, to get the zoysia, you know, a chance to take it back over.
Right.
Specifically looking for like a non-toxic product that I could use. What sort of pre-emergent could I use? What sort of post-emergent could I use to kind of facilitate this?
Basically, when the yellow forsythia is in bloom, you just go to your favorite garden center and tell them that you've got a problem with the crabgrass. They'll, you know, whatever pre-emergence they have, just make sure that, you know, that they know that you're going after that. But it's basically, crabgrass is a warm season annual weed. So that's what you need to get rid of.
Okay.
And then as far as after that, then you're going to have to get zoysia plugs or zoysia sod to infill these spaces.
Okay. Have you had any luck or even tried, I think it's called corn gluten as a pre-emergent?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the ones that's, yeah, it's one of the ones that's recommended.
Okay. All right. I might look into that. Okay, great. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Mike.
Yeah, my pleasure. And Mike from Wentzville, looks like we're not going to be able to get to you today, but hopefully I'll be back next week. And everybody just, you know, enjoy the nice weather we're going to have today. I mean, I wish the sun was out, but we can't have everything. But Mike Miller, KMWalks Garden Hotline, I certainly appreciate all of you having me on your show.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? MaintainX is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With MaintainX, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try MaintainX for free today. Go to MaintainX.com/AI. That's Maintain and the letter X.com/AI.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Hi, I'm Kirk Cameron. Is health insurance eating up your budget for 2026? If you're looking for ways to better steward your finances, consider this. Christian Healthcare Ministries is a health insurance alternative at half the cost. As a ministry, CHM allows you to share the burden of medical bills with other believers. Join CHM today by visiting chministries.org/solution. That's chministries.org/solution.
Bringing a data center online takes more than equipment. It takes precision. Graybar helps customers predict, stage, schedule, deliver, and verify every step of the build with critical products that are available now. From networking and wireless to critical power and testing tools, our teams help you reduce downtime risk and keep projects on track. Speed. Scale. Ready now. Yep. Graybar does that.